Welcome to the Leading Real Change podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Jacqueline Kerr, an expert in workplace culture change. From my unique background in behavior science, public health, and community advocacy, I help corporate leaders with evidence-based individual, team, and organizational change to create thriving workplace cultures for all. In the Leading Real Change podcast, I interview dedicated and passionate change makers about their careers, how they lead change, and what leaders can do today to make a difference, to build healthy, inclusive workplace cultures for all. I'm excited to share these examples of real workplace change with you. You'll learn about effective strategies that are working and how to overcome real barriers to change that challenge us every day. I hope you'll feel inspired and more confident to keep leading change in your workplace. Please share this podcast with other HR, DEI, or ERG leaders who you know are working hard but are struggling to have an impact and need more support to effectively create a thriving workplace culture for all today.
I'm Jennifer Harris Kroll. I have two adult kids that are good members of society. One is 25 and he is a software engineer. He has a great job for a Fortune 500 company. And my daughter is 21. She's a senior studying biomolecular engineering. So she's about to graduate and then go off to grad school. I also happen to have my mom living with me. My dad died almost 2 years ago, and I am basically an only child, and so there wasn't really a lot of other options. She moved in with me at that time. I am the director of growth for Ant Hill, and that means I directly oversee all of our marketing functions, but I peripherally oversee our direction of sales and people operations as well.
Great. Thank you. So since you shared so many personal details there, let's start in on that side, because you and I connected before today. And part of the reason for you wanting to come on the show today was because of your own experience of burnout. So tell us about your recent challenges with burnout, and then we'll get into how Ant Hill has this very unique service to create systems that support other people to prevent burnout.
Yeah, this is relatively new. In fact, I think when we first talked, I had just gotten this diagnosis. I had the foresight several months ago to start working with a functional NP. So she's a nurse practitioner that has been in practice for many years, but has in the last few years moved over to the functional side, really getting to the root causes of issues. And I knew I had been living really in full on chaos and like survival mode for probably a decade, and had really reached a point where I had a moment to breathe and wanted to find a doctor. I had everything you can imagine. I had moved twice. I had fled an abusive relationship and started my life over at 50, changed careers, started over financially. I had a catastrophic injury that really changed my day-to-day function of life. I was 9 months of not walking or even driving. I had moved across the country, finished raising kids, gotten divorced, and then my father died, moved my mom in with me. And I feel very happy that I can do that. And at the same time, that brings up a lot of things there. I had gone through all these phases and had gotten to a point where, okay, I had a moment to breathe. I have not been to the doctor except having massive surgeries for some period of time. I like to go see where I'm at. And I knew I wasn't feeling great. And I knew that I wanted to be healthier, lose weight, all the things. But I really didn't know how bad off I was. And if you had asked me before I got this actual diagnosis, I would have said, yeah, I'm tired, but I just need to be more organized, or I just need to whatever. And that's been my go-to response always. I am always an overachiever. I'm always an overworker. And currently, I love my job. I love the people I work with. I love how we're affecting change in the workplace. And it's very stressful. It's a very hyper-growth startup, but it never feels stressful in that I'm angry or I'm frustrated. I think when people think of stress, they think I'm upset, I'm frustrated, those kinds of things, but I'm happy and I'm excited. And it's like a surprise to me when I look up and it's 9 p.m. and I haven't left my desk since 2 p.m. Or it's like those things are a surprise. I get really into my work. It's very exciting, all those things. And so if you had said, oh, Jennifer, you're going to burn out. And people had said this for years. They said, you don't take care of yourself. Like the same old story. You put everyone first. You take care of everyone else. You need to focus on you. But I didn't understand really what that meant. I thought, I sleep, I eat, I have free time. I don't feel like I'm using it maybe to the best of uses, but I just didn't realize I'd gotten so used to living in this kind of really extreme chaos that it didn't occur to me. If you said you're going to get this diagnosis, I would have denied it. Said, no, I'm happy. I love my job. I'm grateful. All the things, I'm doing better than ever financially in my career. I'm in the prime. But actually what ended up happening is she took this huge battery of tests, which functional MDs and NPs do. So more than just the few little tests you get when you go to a clinic or some regular MD, she dove very deep, and she actually had COVID and had canceled all of her appointments that week except mine, because she said she only works with women that are in their 40s and 50s. She only works with women who are experiencing all these same symptoms. And you have to get on a waiting list. I think I requested getting into her. It might have been like April. And then I didn't get an appointment with her and get the testing done until July and August. So this takes time. And she's very popular. Just finding someone really that does this kind of work is hard. So I was very grateful. Anyways, she had COVID. And she said, look, of all the women that I've worked with, I'm most scared for you. And I was like, what? And so we went through all my tests, and I was in stage 3 adrenal fatigue or failure. So I think there's this misconception that burnout is in your head. And until people start appearing with diabetes, liver, kidney issues, hormone problems, insomnia, thyroid issues, hair loss, yeah, all the weight gain, weight loss, like all those things. And then those are like, you go to the doctor and you get a pill, but really they start much sooner. They start with your adrenals starting to say, hey, we have been working too hard for too long and we're starting to give out. And really what that meant for me was I was not producing any cortisol. My thyroid levels, and she checks some that aren't normally checked, the precursors to issues were at the point where they were about to start this domino effect for thyroid issues, diabetes, all these kinds of things. So I was right on the verge. And I travel. Sometimes I'm in 2 cities a week, speaking, working, doing the things. And I love that part. I really don't consider it stressful. And she's no travel, nothing. You have to stop everything. She really said, you need to leave this job. This job is too stressful, which I was like, I would be heartbroken. But she said, look, if you go somewhere and you call me from a hospital and say, I've had a stroke or a heart attack, I'm not going to be surprised. And so I was like, really? Like my C-reactive protein is incredible. It's like 3 times what's considered high. Like I was in bad shape, but I look fine. The week prior, I was doing a 90-minute presentation at an annual conference. I was in 2 cities. I was at an awards banquet. I was doing all these things. I look fine, right? And I'm functioning okay.
But your body is taking hits all the time from this.
Yeah. And when you see it, your cortisol never goes up. When you wake up in the morning, it's no different than when you go to bed and things like that, that your hormone levels are this and that. And it all has to do with these two little nodules saying, we're done. We're checking out now. And so she immediately said, look, no stress, no sauna, no exercise, no travel, no, nothing too cold, nothing too hot, not even like a scary movie. Like, I don't even want you to get your heart rate over 100. And she immediately put me on this recipe that was really a lot of rest. Sleep hygiene was like the first thing to tackle, and getting a lot of sleep, and things like yoga nidra and meditation and journaling. She doesn't really tell you what to eat, but like focusing on proteins, those kinds of things. I am technically overweight, but I have really been under eating for decades. And I would maybe be lucky to get in 20 grams of protein a day. And you should be getting in something like 100 plus, depending on your height and weight and all that. And so that's been a struggle for me to learn to eat. I'm eating more than I've ever eaten and losing weight. Those kinds of things are starting to happen. So I'm starting to see a difference in things, but it's been a complete lifestyle overhaul.
Thank you so much for sharing that with us. And thank goodness there was someone like that nurse who, as you say, it's particularly for women at our life stage that have this awareness and know what to look for. So I'm very glad for that. And in the medical industry, I think there's not enough of that. And so often our age issues have just not been part of research or part of the healthcare. So I'm really grateful that you're in this place, but also that it's such a good story in terms of, I know other women who are in burnout have experienced adrenal fatigue, and the messaging you're getting in terms of go exercise or whatever, that's not necessarily the right message depending on where you're at. Many women I speak to experience burnout because something physical happens. So like our brains can push it back, but then our bodies, we say our bodies let us down, but it's like actually they've grabbed us and said stop. But I love this juxtaposition of you loving your job and having a purposeful job and being at a life stage where yes, you can enjoy travel as part of your job and that it's not a stress. I think that's fascinating because I think even positive stress on our bodies, right, positives mentally can be still wearing on our bodies. And then saying I love this job, but my body needs certain things and my brain needs certain things too. How do I then create a life where I can feel passionate and still do this job with more boundaries, right?
And what was interesting to me is if I had waited longer than and not seen a functional health professional, I would have ended up with a thyroid condition and a heart condition and diabetes, and someone would have given me pills and we would have moved on with life that was normal. And now I'm already starting to reverse these things with these lifestyle choices before I got to the point. So I just would encourage people to go find functional health professionals to go look and be willing to make those true root cause changes.
You are speaking my language as a public health person who always focuses on prevention. I love it when someone else says it instead of me. But as you say, and root causes is such an important theme for what we're going to talk about too, because that's really the focus of this whole season is about systems change. What do we do to change the systems in which we work, say personally? And so you're having to institute a whole different way of living, but then also how can companies like yours change systems in the way we work? And I think that's the thing. We really have to acknowledge that so much about the way we work and the way we live is broken. That's why we do have such high rates of heart disease, diabetes, et cetera. And that we need to actually change the way we live and the way we work.
It's very interesting to me that you said that people are told to exercise more. They get this impression they exercise more because I was told that I can't benefit from stress that's healthy until I fix being able to handle stress in general. Like my body's still going to react in a negative way, regardless of where the stress comes from.
I think that's so important because so many people say, but there's good stress and bad stress. But that's such an important message, depending on how your body's going to be able to receive that, whether it's been stretched thin by good stress or stretched thin by bad stress, what impact is it going to have? I think that is so important for you to phrase exactly like that. That's so good. So let's get into your company.
I would like to talk about how Ant Hill handled my burnout. So this was very hard because when people are high performers or high achievers, it's very difficult to A, admit you have a weakness, and B, you do have these thoughts of I can just do 5% less and figure it out, but really you can't. And so I came to the point where I had to tell my boss, I answered directly to the CEO, that I'd had this diagnosis because really I had 3 speaking engagements coming up and I had to cancel them. And their response, her and both co-founders' response immediately was, what do you need from us? Do you need a month off? Do you need a different work schedule? Like, what can we do? And I said, I don't know. I know what I need to do right now at this moment, but let's think about it. And so I had to really come to terms. It was really me had to come to terms with figuring out a solution that I would stick to. If I said, okay, from now to the end of the year, one of the things I thought was maybe I don't start working till noon. And then I have the mornings to get some of this routine down and do all the food prep and the things that I needed to try to do. And then I would work until a little bit later in the evening. I'm on the East Coast and our team is all over, so that would have worked out fine. But do I trust myself to not check my email or check my Slack or answer people's questions before noon? No, I would not have to be honest that I'm going to check. I'm going to see if my team needs anything from me or if someone has a question. And so that probably won't work. So then what do we do? And so we're really still in the middle of how do we figure it out? And how we've handled it so far is to be open with people. I've told my team, I told the people that I work with, didn't make a big company announcement or anything, but just said, hey, I'm figuring this out. But in the meantime, I'm going to delegate some things to other people. And so I immediately went into setting up my team. Here are things that I would like for you to be in charge of, if that's okay with you. Keep in mind your capacity. I don't want to dump things on you, but if you have capacity and want an opportunity to take on something like this, then let's talk about it. They were all like, yeah, I actually would really appreciate those opportunities. And then we literally put a list on our Notion homepage of here's who's in charge of what, but ask these people first. If you're looking for these things, ask them first. And that has worked out really well. Just being very clear about who to go to ask questions, and then me being okay with delegating things. So I would say now we're in a unique position, right? Early stage company, there's not a lot of precedents and or old systems that we have to try to come up against. We're creating them as we go. But what has come out of it is when people have an issue, let's make it okay for them to talk about it. And let's make it okay for them to figure out what they need and become self-aware enough to figure out if that will really work and be honest and then see if we can do that thing. And so we would like to continue that for our culture going forward, for sure. And we already have things like unlimited vacation, those kinds of things that a lot of companies our age do, but it's hard to take those days off when you do really love your job. And then we do a lot of checking in, like my boss checks in on me consistently and asking how I'm doing and if I need anything. And so I think that as long as people feel the freedom to be honest, that's a really good step in the right direction.
Thank you again for sharing that. That's so important at so many levels, because again, we have to acknowledge what we bring to the table. And we do. If we're overgivers, perfectionists, people pleasers, very driven, then we have all these expectations for ourselves that in some ways society and our upbringing can have put on us, but we now have put them on ourselves as well. If you tell someone whose self-worth is tied to them being productive, if you tell them to rest, they're not going to, because you've just taken away their self-worth. So again, we have to understand this sort of messaging of how we come up with solutions. And I agree that there isn't an answer. It is about experimenting, because you've not worked in this way before. But again, that's what people need to hear. I love that you have examples of delegating and how that provides opportunities to other people. And I think sometimes we're afraid to delegate, particularly the tasks we don't like, to other people, but our horrible task is somebody else's strength. And so again, it's finding a team that can pull together and pick up all those different parts. And I think as a leader, demonstrating this vulnerability, this is what also leads to psychological safety for your employees. So I definitely admire your bravery in doing this, but this is actually part of an important leadership strategy, so that your employees know they also have permission to do the same.
I hope they do. I do believe this is making me a better leader. I am more aware of looking at my team members as a whole and asking them, you know, how are you doing this week? I know that this is finals week, or this is a vacation, your kids are on break, or this is happening or that's happening. Do you need anything to change this week to help you get through the week? So I think overall that's making me a better leader, because having gone through it myself, I can at least provide the space for people to say, I would really like it if I didn't have to have any meetings on Thursday afternoon or whatever. And being able to do things like that is really gratifying. So I think overall, I feel better about myself as a leader. Hopefully that means I am a better leader, but we'll see if that translates.
I think it's so important in early leadership. And the same, I would say before I experienced my burnout, I didn't necessarily have as much compassion for other people. It was very much, if I can do it, you can do it too, because I've probably got way more stresses than you do. That was my mentality. And then also the other side of it was, you can take a break, you can do it, but I'm not going to, I can't afford to. And that then doesn't give anybody permission to do anything. So that double standard doesn't work either.
And of course you attract like people, right? So I tend to have overachievers on my team. And so I've actually had to mentally go, oh no, it's Friday afternoon. I'm not sending them these documents. I know they're going to look at them over the weekend and do work, or I'm not going to let them see that I'm on Slack for 5 minutes because I need a document or to remind over the weekend. I'm learning those things too. I'm not sending the email, not sending the message after Friday afternoon or whatever. For both of those things you said, I don't want them to feel like A, they need to respond or do anything about it, or B, see me, I'm not being the good example if I'm doing those things. That's another lesson that hopefully they will trickle down.
And we need those guardrails, because again, I always say to people, your most caring, overachieving employees are a huge strength, but they're not necessarily good at putting boundaries and limits on themselves. So if you as an organization or as a leader can provide those guardrails, because we so often just go, here's the minimum you have to achieve to get promoted versus, okay, here's the top end where we don't want you to go over this because we know what it results in. We lose you in the long term because you're burned out.
One more point I think I would love to make is, overall, I think this has made us a better team because we have been forced to focus. I have been forced to choose priorities and let things go. And I actually think we've accomplished more and more important things and gotten further down the road, even with me being a little more limited in the hours that I'm putting in and that kind of stuff. And I think that I've been delegating in a more direct, purposeful way. So overall, I would say the last few weeks we've been doing this, the outcome has been better work and moving the ball forward in a better way and maybe even further.
I love that. And that's absolutely, yes. When we start to focus, because the data shows that we're spending like 60, 70% of the time talking about how we work instead of actually doing the work. And again, when you start to focus and say, what are the most meaningful tasks? I know even the Surgeon General around his messaging around burnout was saying, get rid of the stupid stuff. So there's the Surgeon General with his physician leadership saying, get rid of the stupid stuff, because it is, there's so much of what we do that we can let go of and not need to do. And I think some companies have found that with moving to remote, but there's a lot that we have held on to traditional ways of doing things that are not focused. And I think particularly when you think about focus and impact too, you're really talking about how are people productive towards impact versus that presenteeism that some companies are still demonstrating, that they're tracking when people are online, what they're doing, instead of as though they're looking at the jacket on the back of the office chair as being present and productive versus, okay, what are the goals that we really need to meet? And I think focus is such an important tool for managers to think about, not only to prevent burnout, but also to allow people to be promoted in the right way. When we focus on the most impactful things and have that level of performance be how we get promotions versus the people who work longer, basically being rewarded for working longer hours in their promotional capacity. So I like those changes in mindset too. This is so fantastic. I give a webinar telling people to do this and you're saying, this is what has worked for you. So I love it. I'm absolutely loving it. So now let's get to the other piece of this, which is purpose. So I have a guide for companies, which is focus, flexibility, fairness, and purpose. And that's part of really what motivates you and why you're loving working from Ant Hill is because of the purpose you find in this work. So tell us a little bit then about the systems change that Ant Hill's creating.
I want to acknowledge that I know I'm very aware that I am in a privileged position. I do get to work from home. I have the financial security to pay for tests and doctors and supplements, and I have the flexibility to adjust my working hours. I have the earned position of people knowing that I'm a performer and having a history of high performance. And I know that I have put myself in a situation that not everyone can be in. So when we talk about who Ant Hill serves and our end users, we call them deskless employees. They are employees that have to be physically present to do their work. So these are warehouse employees, manufacturing employees, retail employees, delivery people. Some people call them frontline, but they don't have the luxury of working from home or adjusting their hours. They need to show up for their shift when their shift starts and leave when it's over. I want to recognize that before we move on, that it's a different story for people that Ant Hill supports. And what Ant Hill does is we provide a 24/7 HR support and communication center for these employees that don't work at a desk. And that doesn't mean remote. That means, again, people who have to be physically present to do their job. They make up 80% of the global workforce, but are virtually left out of every HR SaaS product that exists, because most of them you access through a computer. And a lot of these employees don't have smartphones, don't have a data plan, maybe don't speak English. There are a lot of barriers to communicating with these employees, as well as giving them access to software and systems that companies are already paying for. And a lot of companies are doing these things with benefiting these employees in mind. Hey, let's provide these benefits. Hey, let's use this software so that they can do XYZ. But the problem becomes, how do we connect them to this? And Ant Hill does all of those things just through text messaging. So it works on any phone. It auto-translates into over 110 languages. And so now we've removed a huge barrier for 80% of the global workforce to now be able to not just have two-way anonymous communications, but access those things. And a lot of those things are simple. I need a copy of my W-2 mailed to me. You would be surprised at how many very large employers spend a lot of money, seven figures, eight figures a year, on call centers just so employees can call in and get a paper W-2. Now they can just text the number and get it mailed to them.
It's like a sort of intranet, right? But many of the parts of it are anonymous. So this is creating psychological safety in a group of workers who really don't, like you say, aren't afforded that necessarily, either because they're not part of a workplace that provides it, but also just partly because of how they're distributed. So tell us a little bit more about that side of it in terms of how it helps with psychological safety, which is a real important basis for burnout prevention.
Yeah, we've had a lot of customers request that we do provide them this information, and that's something we will never do. Now, how we do that is the system answers about 85% of requests that come in automatically. So either through connecting them with a software or a system the company already has, or through auto replies that the company can build in or we can build in. It's very easy to do, basically loading an employee handbook or something like that into it. Our AI also reads intent. So a person doesn't have to spell something correctly or say something correctly for it to make a very good guess at what the person is really looking for and guide them to that. And those requests always remain anonymous. Now, if someone has a request like, I didn't get paid or my pay was incorrect, that's going to be really difficult to solve anonymously. So that gets escalated. And the person opts in to sharing their identity. And so right there, they have proof that we don't know who they are. We can't help you. So they double opt in to sharing their identity. That gets escalated to the correct person. And we even have some barriers built in. If they have an HR-related, maybe private matter, maybe they do need to say, hey, my manager is doing something that's not okay or something like that. Those kinds of questions get routed to staff members that are really should be the only people that see those. So they can feel safe that their manager isn't going to see that request. So our system reads those things and routes them to the correct person. But going back to the pay issue, the person's identity is shared with the right person that handles that. They give them a call, fix that problem. Then they go back to being anonymous in a way that's not traceable. even these conversations, even though that data is stored in the system, there's no way to tell who that person was or track who made that conversation. So that in itself creates a ton of psychological safety, but I would say that the proof is in what happens. Again, those opt-ins, questions being asked back, people trying it and realizing, hey, this is true. Also, being a third party is very helpful for any company to say, oh, we have this number you can call. That anybody who's trying to do that, even with office workers, it should always be a third party handling that. So that adds as well. But I think the results speak for themselves. We have a 97% adoption rate. Apps and other tools that are trying to do this work, apps typically, if you get a 20% adoption rate, that's huge. Ours is 97%. And we're now averaging, it's hard to keep up with the numbers, but we're averaging about 22 unique conversations per user per month. So when somebody asks us, are they really going to use the system? What do they want to know? I don't know, but they're asking at least 22 questions a month is how I want to answer it. So they must have a lot to say. If you think about that from an employer's perspective, that's a lot of data that you can utilize to make good decisions. In addition to all of that, we can actually also send out surveys, campaigns, handle your onboarding, all that kind of stuff. But we can also send out questions that help you understand, we call them drivers. So we can understand their employees' drivers of work experience and can with great accuracy predict, we call them retention analytics, but predict whether someone's going to leave and why. And that's the beauty of being built by two IO psychologists, is we have this very complicated thing under the hood. And so without you knowing who the people are, and without them really knowing that there's data is getting gathered, we can tell a company some things that they could change, some levers that they can push or pull to make a significant change in whether or not people want to remain working there. And then when people start to see those things happening, that creates an additional layer of trust and safety. It's not a heavy lift for anyone. And these aren't big issues. These are getting paid on time and the correct amount. Who can afford to not get paid on the right day or the right amount? Believe it or not, that happens often. That's not okay. Transportation, other things that are simple like that. And so we're not talking about, we're going to share with you that you need to build this whole entire new program and spend another $10 million. No, it's something simple like, where do I get extra safety equipment? Or we need to be able to have access to safety equipment. Things like that really aren't difficult.
So it sounds like some of it is logistics, but if you're not getting those basic logistical needs met as an employee who doesn't have access to, as I say, other systems to be heard, then yeah, those are like, if you think about the Maslow's hierarchy of needs, you're dealing with some of the more basic needs, but if they're not met, so that's fascinating that so much of that still needs to be attended to and that's missing, but also how much it's related to retention. So yeah, tell us a little bit more if you can about what are some of those predictors of retention or some of the psychological pieces of this that you think basically are part of this solution.
And every organization is a little bit different, but you're absolutely correct. We talk about Maslow's hierarchy of needs often, and I can't imagine a week going by where it doesn't come up. When we're talking about burnout. And so when you're talking about this workforce, there's a pressure in not having as many luxuries as maybe an office worker does, right? As far as like being in a comfortable setting, being able to take a lunch when you want, going to the bathroom when you want. These are simple things, right? That often people don't really think about. Standing on your feet 8 hours a day, just simple things. And so we're talking about a group that really is at high risk for burnout just based on the job they do. Then when you layer in perhaps pay, benefits, cost of living, those kinds of things you're talking about, and not every deskless worker is an hourly worker. I do want to add, you could be talking about a store manager at a Target. You could be talking about an electrician, a plumber, a welder, all of these different kinds of people, but they tend to have more physically demanding jobs. And sometimes you've got physical, and especially when you're customer facing, physically, emotionally, all of these things layered in. And I think the more of those factors you have as an employer, you have to consider, what am I doing to balance that? Al Reeser from Reeser's Fine Foods. I met him once. I used to work at Oregon State University, and I had the luxury of spending the day with him. And one of the things that he told me about was when they remodeled their bathrooms and their lunch kitchen areas in his factory, their productivity went up significantly. And he said that everything stayed cleaner and people were nicer to each other. And it changed all of these things. And it was remarkable to him. But then he realized, duh, just making an area nice for someone, even if you're a welder in a factory, but you have a nice lunchroom to go to, is your employer telling you that you matter, that we think you're important, that we want you to have a nice place to relax, even if you only have 15 minutes. Those are things I'm not sure everyone thinks of, but are obvious after the fact. Right. But that's a couple of examples of things that I have seen in my life. Now, as far as Ant Hill goes, what are the levers of retention? Flexibility to an extent, right? So people understand if they work, if they have shift work, that they're going to be working a shift. But is it easy for me? Is it even safe or okay for me to request a day off or a different shift on a day if I have to go take my mom to the doctor or take my husband to the doctor or my wife or whatever? If I have something I need to do, is it easy for me to, do I know who to ask? First of all, is it easy for me to access a schedule, and can I request a change? And the labor market's tight. There are all these things. Everybody understands that, but still people have lives. And is the employer understanding that? Yeah, we do want you to have the ability to attend to these things outside of life. So what can you do is the attitude of that.
Great. Those are great examples. And I wanted to pull back to two things that you said, because again, you're helping develop these drivers because people aren't thinking about them. Again, the person that's sitting in the office is not thinking about what it's like to be not sitting in that office. And I think that's also, there's such a huge disconnect in corporate America at the moment between the C-suite and employers at so many levels, related to productivity, related to wellness, related to flexibility, that there's a certain group of people that see the world from that one perspective, and they're just not able to see it from another way. So again, I love that basically your company and your system is bringing that information to the fore. So I think that is really important, because we have to recognize where we can't. We talk about empathy, we talk about walking in other people's shoes, but we're not in their shoes, and they're not right next to us every day for us to step into. So it is one of those things. We need systems to help us do those types of things, and also just systems to make things the easy option. Again, in our health, we think about that so often, that it's not the easy option to, say, go out and go for a bike ride if there's no bike lanes, if there's no sidewalk. So that kind of comes back to what the example you said about building lunch spaces and bathroom spaces. How we build our environments is so important for how it makes people feel. And like you say, that productivity. And that kind of comes back to where I come from. My public health is, we have basically, you're an individual, so you're doing the things that you've had to do as an individual, Jennifer, to manage your own expectations and boundaries and health behaviors. But again, you're also affected by the environment you're in, your access to a nurse practitioner, your access to healthy foods, or access to a corporate environment that's supportive. And so that's really why I want to focus on this so much more, is these systems for people to understand there are always these multiple levels that are impacting us. This is not fix the person. There's this interaction between where we live, where we work, and who we are as well. And we're so often just focusing on fix the person, not fix the access to resources.
Yeah. An easy example of helping people access, I know of one employer that had a couple of vendors from a farmer's market show up once a week in the parking lot, so that people could get fresh fruit, vegetables, maybe some eggs or something like that once a week, have access to that. Very meaningful. everyone goes home happy, right? The vendors are thrilled to show up. The farmers are happy to come and do. The employees are thrilled because they don't have to go to the grocery store. And oh, by the way, this is probably less expensive and better for us. And they can just pick it up and go home and make some dinner or whatever. And so everybody wins. And I think that's an easy win that an employer can utilize if people just think outside the box a little like that. It makes a big impact.
I think that's such a fantastic example. I love it. Just to wrap up then, any last messages that you'd like to share? You've provided us such great, really lived examples of how to manage things yourself, how a company can manage it, how a leader goes forward, and how systems can support us, including how we build environments or provide resources in those environments. But anything maybe as you go forward, what are the things you think are going to be challenging that you want people to think about, or big lessons? Because as you say, this is life-changing for you and many of us who are here listening in this space have also experienced that. So lots of people say to me, will I be the same again? And will I get through this? And I was like, no, you may want to be back to that super mom you were. Maybe at that time you could be that super mom, but maybe now you can't. And that was hard to have to accept that too. But also that, yes, you'll get out and be on the other side. Those are questions that people ask me. So maybe those thoughts will also give you some ideas for providing hope or perspective for people here.
There's so much I want to say that we don't have time for. I would say, no, you won't be the same. You'll be something better. I think that it being a person who is an overachiever and giving and loving and kind and empathetic and also has healthy boundaries is not a bad thing. I think I actually have a capacity to get more done now. I just, like you were saying, get rid of the stupid stuff. I have purposeful rest. Like, I don't just zone out and watch Netflix or do whatever. And there's all these games we play with ourselves, right, that end up actually hurting us. And like staying up late, because people stay up late sometimes because that's the only quiet time they have. And they're like, I deserve this, but it's really not helping you to not be sleeping. So stop playing those games with yourself. But I think you'll end up better would be the answer. You won't be the same. You'll be someone better. I think as far as like people interacting with people goes, I think if you can walk through life and not add to someone's stress as much as possible. And if you're at Walmart or Safeway or wherever and you're shopping and they don't have your exact pumpkin puree, please don't yell at the person who is stocking the shelves. It's not their fault. And you don't know what they're dealing with. And so just the idea of being kind and like defaulting to being kind will help people in general, especially in those roles. Customer facing roles are probably the toughest, I would think, on our psyche and all those things. Listen to what people tell you would be my next piece of advice. If people are saying you need to take care of yourself, you need to whatever, go in search of answers. Look for someone that's a functional health provider. And then when it comes to your family and kids, I can't imagine a husband not wanting their wife to be healthy and live longer and not have potential horrible outcomes later in life. So if that's an issue, that's a different conversation to have with that person. But when it comes to your kids, I can share the biggest complaint I've gotten from my children. So I had parents that were, I'm the sandwich generation. So I had boomer parents, I'm Gen X, I have Gen Z kids. So I was raised with those parents that weren't there, came home as a latchkey kid, all this stuff, right? And so I wanted to be present and available. And I really sacrificed a lot to make them think I didn't work or I wasn't going back to school and make them think I was a stay-at-home mom no matter what. And the biggest complaint that I got out of that was, now that they're adults, they said, you know, what really sucks is our childhood was so great that being an adult kind of sucks. Like, you made it this lovely fantasy and now they're not like hating life or anything, but they're like, we have these really great memories and that's great, but maybe they were a little too good. And so I would like caution people that a little disappointment, frustration never hurts anybody. And I do see moments when I could have provided those opportunities for them to be resilient a little more instead of saving them consistently. And I think that as a parent right now, especially, there's so much, it's a different world. I grew up in a generation where it's like, get out of the house. I don't want to see you till dark. My parents had no idea where I was. I rode my bike all over town. We can't do that anymore. We don't live in that world anymore. And so there's this added pressure of you have to entertain them 24/7 and know where they are and do all of these things and the magazines and everything. This is what a great mom looks like. And you need this $900 stroller and you have to serve them organic homemade baby food and just all the things is overwhelming. That's actually not true. I always have told my kids, I'm doing the best I can, and I'm not going to be perfect. So we'll just figure it out together. And they appreciated that. And we are very close. I've probably talked to them both 3 or 4 times today. And we don't live in the same state, for those of you who are wondering, they're adults. And it's not like a crazy relationship. We actually really enjoy each other. And we actually are part of each other's lives and enjoy sharing information or asking questions of each other and all that kind of stuff. But I do see where I could have made their life a little less, I'm using air quotes, perfect, and they would have still turned out okay. So that, I think that we can give ourselves a little bit of a break there.
That's perfect. And that is such good advice that the pressures are enormous. And yeah, I remember reading the book, Why Women Don't Sleep. And it was explaining exactly where you're at in that position of being sandwiched, looking after a parent, having children, but the expectations, including, are we buying all the right products? Are we saving the world? On top of, are we providing our kids with education, safety, just issues that weren't there before. And I think too, particularly with the mental health epidemic that's now coming through in kids as well, is as parents having to understand, how do you support them in that? And in our situation, feeling like we don't know, this is just another thing that as a parent is on your shoulders and just does feel like it's a really difficult challenge. So I love it. Parenting advice to give them room for resilience development.
Yeah, there's a huge epidemic of anxiety. I have anxiety. I have worked with people who have high anxiety. My kids have anxiety. It's an epidemic. And sometimes I think people use that word in replacement of stress. Not all the time, but sometimes I see this in my children, that you're not really having anxiety. You're stressed over this situation that you've never done before. For example, my daughter is applying for graduate school right now. And she talks about her anxiety about it. And I try to express to her, consider using another word, because it's normal to have stress because you would like to get in to these schools and you don't know the outcome. And that's always a stressful situation. And you're putting yourself in that situation on purpose. But look, you're doing the best you can. You have to expect some stress out of it. But the bottom line is, you will get in somewhere, and whatever your life is meant to be will be. Like, you're going to have a great life. The outcome is not you end up living at home forever. The outcome is you get into some school and you live happily ever after. So let's just maybe try to use some different verbiage and consider, it, is this really an anxious moment, or is this just a normal phase I'm going through in this time? Being in your 20s is stressful. Let's just face it. And I think today, I don't know if that's an okay thing to say, because I know I don't have a medical degree or I'm not a psychologist, but this is what I see on my kids, is sometimes they use the term anxiety when to me, it really seems like just a normal, stressful situation.
Yeah, it's a growth moment, right? Yeah, you're pushing your boundaries. And yes, it's going to make you feel unsure.
And I do feel like there's extra pressure on them. I try to express to them, look, you're living in a world where you can compare yourself to a million people right through your phone, and you feel like you have to have everything figured out. And that's not the truth. I'm going to be 52 very soon. And I love my life, but I don't feel like I have it figured out. And so you don't have to have these things figured out. I always encourage them to try stuff and see if they can fail. How many things can you fail at today? And that's how you get ahead. Not always being perfect. If you only go into situations where you know you're going to be perfect, then how much growth is involved there?
Thanks so much for listening today. I hope the podcast brings you fresh ideas, renewed confidence, and energy to keep leading change. If you need a partner in these efforts, I can help you effectively build a thriving workplace culture for all. I'll help you overcome the real barriers to change you face every day and help you lead real change with evidence-based solutions. In particular, I want to work with passionate leaders who have tried and failed. because I know you have what it takes, and your experience will help you clearly recognize the difference I can make. For a free consultation today, please visit my website at www.leading-real-change.com. That's www.leadingrealchange.com.
Take control, you're a